And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's that time of the week. We bring in friend of the show, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. TD, what's going on, my man?
Hey, what's going on, man? Good morning, fellas.
Good morning to you as well. And TD, obviously the news coming out yesterday, Derrick Henry has signed the franchise tag tender. I think both Joe and I have agreed that's a good sign in terms of the relationship aspect of the negotiations between Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans. What's kind of your reaction to the news coming out that Henry has signed his franchise tag tender?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I feel it's a good move towards them getting a long-term deal worked out. Both sides want to get that done, so it's definitely a good situation. And now, whenever this whole thing passes and they get back into the groove of things, you don't have to worry about a holdout. That's really the biggest thing.
Does it make you think any differently, Teron, about, you know, just this coming together? And how confident are you, and what do you think a long-term deal looks like at this point?
Yeah, I felt all along that that was something that was going to happen. You know, as far as the long-term deal, John Robinson hinted at wanting to do that one. We spoke to him at the combine, and obviously Derrick Henry, you know, he wanted to get paid. So I thought all along it was going to happen. Now, as far as what that deal could look like, I mean, it could be all over the place. You know, I think it's a deal that they want to get done, but they obviously have to make sure they don't handicap themselves down the line. So I think it'll be a front-loaded deal. I would say a 3 to 4 year deal, but one that they could get out of after 2 years. I think it's going to be high in guaranteed money. You know, I think his goal is going to, and I'm talking about true guaranteed money. You know, I think his goal is going to be to beat Ezekiel Elliott in one way or another. You know, whether it's average, which you could put together a deal to be framed to where it looks like, oh yeah, the average is really good. But I think there's going to be a high guarantee, and that's going to be covered within the first 2 years.
Teron, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel addressing the media earlier this week, outside of Derrick Henry that John Robinson talked about there, what were your biggest takeaways from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel?
For me, it was that they're still in the Jadeveon Clowney race. I thought that was really interesting. He was very open with that. You know, he said he talked to the representatives, and there's some things that, you know, they're trying to work through and see what happens. That was probably the biggest standout. I thought it was also interesting how he had mentioned that if they aren't able to come to the facility to do the draft, they're going to do Zoom or Microsoft. I'm not going to give them a free endorsement.
That's right.
He talked about different ways that they could be able to teleconference so they could make the draft happen.
Yeah, the Clowney thing is interesting, Teron. And John Clayton, who, of course, you know, is out in Seattle, I think he tweeted yesterday, you know, the price tag maybe down around $17 million mark. I'm bad at math, but I'm looking at their cap space and the various things they still have to do, you know, down the road here, and I'm struggling to see how that would work for them either. I mean, what do you think the number would have to be for that to get serious?
I think that 17, 18 million is a number that they could make happen. I covered the Eagles for a bit, and Howie Roseman, I saw him do some different things to make numbers work. And I would imagine that, you know, Vin Marino, he could get that done too. And they may have to shift some things around for different contracts to make it happen. But if a team really wants a player, they could make it happen. So I think, you know, that 17, 18 million, I think that's something that they could make some things happen to afford, and that way they could bring him in.
Would you pay him that much?
I'm sorry?
Would you pay him that much?
I would. I think he impacts the game enough to be able to do that. And obviously, it's not always in the box score, but yeah, I would pay him that much.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us. Teron, how surprised are you that Logan Ryan has been on the market this long? And just from all indications, just the market for him doesn't seem to be where he thought it would be.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that he's still there. I felt that he was one of those guys that would go, maybe not in that first wave, but right afterwards. And it's very interesting that he's still out there. I don't know what the situation is. I don't think $10 million, which is apparently the asking price, I don't think that's too much for a guy like Logan Ryan and what he brings to the table. So I really want to see what happens. You know, that's another situation where John Robinson said they've been in contact with his representatives also. So we'll see.
Okay, well, I'm gonna keep with the Terons in the GM chair hypotheticals with you here, then, Teron. So, if the Titans could get Logan Ryan, whether it's, you know, maybe it's a little bit less than 10, whatever it may be, then you got more flexibility for some other things, or you're strapped but you get Clowney. Which way are you choosing?
Yeah, that's tough.
I stumped you for a second.
No, it didn't stump me. It's just tough to, after seeing the impact that Logan Ryan has, right, as a leader and then also as a player, it's tough, especially considering how much leadership has just flowed right out of that locker room. But I would probably say get Clowney. And I think what you're going to have to do is have your front end make your back end better, you know. And if they get Clowney, then that means, you know, that first round, they have to really hope that Jeff Gladney will be there. If not, then, you know, you're going to have to draft a corner at some point in those first three rounds.
Teron, how concerned would you be if Mike Vrabel is indeed the guy who ends up calling plays on defense, that in terms of how he operates as a head coach, that maybe takes him away, maybe not even intentionally, but takes him out of some more of the head coaching responsibilities, since he's going to be so focused on calling plays defensively?
I wouldn't be concerned about that. I think he could still do what he has to do as a head coach, even though he's calling plays, because honestly, defense is his baby, you know what I mean? So either way, on game day, he's still involved with the play calling. You know, I'm talking about when Dean Pease was there. He was still involved either way, you know. So I think he would be fine. I don't think there would be any issues. I think bringing in Hazlitt was a good move for him, because that gives him another veteran, a guy who's been in that head coaching chair that can actually – you know, help him out as far as preparation is concerned and even reactionary situations on game day.
Teron, we've talked a lot about, you know, just the NFL in general, the fact that they are pushing forward. They've gone through free agency here as normal. It's not normal, but they've, you know, at normal time. The draft is happening. There's some criticism for that. I know I guess I'm grateful that, you know, we have at least something to talk about. But what do you think about the way Roger Goodell has handled this? And what do you think the draft is going to look like on those 3 days?
I think he's done a great job handling it, honestly. And if you look at the different things that have still went on, I don't see any of them being a health hazard, right? I mean, what's bad about having a video conference with a prospect, you know, or what's bad about, you know, talking to representatives on the phone. I think it's fine with what they've done. Now, as far as the draft is concerned, it's really unfortunate for Vegas, right? Because I know they were going to try. I don't think they can outdo what happened here in Nashville last year, but they were going to try. So it's unfortunate that the draft isn't out there as far as the whole spectacle that it normally is. But I think it's going to look like the old days. You know, you watch the 30 for 30, right? Elway, Esiason, and then Marino. You know what I mean? And it's picking up the phone and making announcements. I think that's how it's going to look. So it's going to be cool in a way because it will be different, right? And everybody's going to have to set up in their home offices. Even the analysts. So that's going to be just a different thing. But I think it's going to be all virtual, you know, all online.
Teron, last thing for you here. Obviously, you've had some conversations with Jalen Hurts, former Oklahoma quarterback, of course, former Alabama quarterback as well. What do you make of his prospects at the quarterback position in the NFL?
I think he's a top three quarterback. And I just find it really interesting how there are some other quarterbacks who haven't done what he's been able to do and have different question marks, but those question marks are just kind of tucked away, you know. And I think Hurts, if you look at it and you just want a football player that could step right in and lead your team from the jump, he's the guy. I don't think there's any quarterback more ready to do that as far as like being able to lead. Now, obviously, you know, Joe Burrow, you know, that's a guy who has, you know, who's a better prospect. But I think Jalen Hurts is not getting the props that he really should. And it's a shame. But, you know, it's happened before where guys were overlooked and over-doubted. And they got to the league and they did the right thing and showed that, you know, the people on their side were right. And I think if he goes to the Patriots, it's going to be very interesting. And that's the team I think is going to get it.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport has been our guest here on Morning Drive. TD, thanks so much as always, man, for joining us. We appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.
When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of the Jalen Hurts conversation. Some interesting comments by Teron Davenport there. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Jalen Hurts on Talking with DD, TD, talking to Teron Davenport, who we just had on our show here in the last segment. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, some interesting comments from TD there in the last segment saying that, you know, he looks at Jalen Hurts as a top three quarterback in this draft. I mean, I really like Jalen Hurts. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say he's a top three quarterback in the draft, but I do think maybe some under evaluation has gone on in terms of how kind of the hype he's been getting heading into the draft.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really interesting one. And TD has been consistent with this for a long time, that he thinks Jalen Hurts is being underrated. I think one problem for Jalen Hurts is that and we all watch him in Alabama and everybody watch every Alabama game, right? And he suffers from the comparison with Tua because obviously yes. Tua comes in and you're like, oh, okay, now there's a difference. And you knew he wasn't going to win the job from Tua and he didn't. And they did a nice job of using him in that year that they were together. So at that point, I mean, I really didn't think Jalen Hurts was a prominent NFL quarterback prospect. I do think differently after the way he played last year. I mean, I think he developed and got better. I mean, the bottom line to me is, in this league, can you consistently deliver the ball with accuracy? It starts there. Unless, you know, you have spectacular skills elsewhere. You know, like a Lamar Jackson has a combination of, I think he's, you know, one of the most dangerous athletes in the NFL, and he has a huge arm, okay?
Yes.
In both, you know, both areas, you know, like superior to a guy like Hurts. I do think you could make the case for Hurts. I mean, Burrow and Tua, to me, are easily your top two. But I think you could make a case for Hurts possibly being a better NFL quarterback than Jordan Love or the Oregon quarterback, Justin Herbert. I mean, I'm really skeptical about Herbert, you know. I think you could make that case. With all those guys, I don't know. The only two people I feel great about in this draft at quarterback are Burrow and Tua.
Well, and the interesting part about Jalen Hurts is because, like, the knock on him when he left Alabama was, you know, he can't deliver the ball accurately. He looked pretty good delivering the ball accurately to me at Oklahoma last year. I don't know what you thought about it, Joe, but he looked very improved and vastly improved as a passer to me.
No, I agree. No, I mean, watching him last year, I'm like, okay, I think he's got a shot here. I really didn't think he had much of one before the way he played last year. He got better. Players can get better. You know, I think sometimes with quarterback accuracy, it's almost like a jump shot in basketball. Like, there's only so much you can do. You know, sometimes you have it or you don't, kind of thing. But certainly he got better, and there's no doubt about it. And so I'm going to be really interested. The idea that TD threw out there of Hurts in New England, I think that would be a lot of fun. But Marquise, I mean, you know, you covered Jalen up close. I mean, you've seen him. What do you think? Do you have a different take on him as an NFL quarterback than you did a couple years ago?
Yeah, I mean, he was his first season, like, he was fantastic. And this was, you know, credited to Lane Kiffin being his offensive coordinator. Jalen ran into a lot of problems that a lot of quarterbacks end up making. Not even themselves, of just there's so much coaching turnover at Alabama that he was getting different offensive coordinators every year, different offensive schemes. So first he had Lane Kiffin, who played within his skill set, and then all of a sudden you get Brian Daboll, who wants to run a whole completely different offense, and then you got Mike Locksley, who is a mixture of both what Brian Daboll wanted to do and what Lane Kiffin wanted to do. So then he just got into this bubble to where he's being looked at as a system type quarterback. And when he went to Lincoln Riley, one thing Lincoln Riley does well is play within his quarterback skill sets. And I think that's what Lincoln Riley did. And that's why he looked so good last year. He's improved. At first, I didn't think he was going to be a NFL quarterback at first, because I just didn't see the intangibles enough to where it made me look at an NFL quarterback. I thought he should have took the Braxton Miller route. And I'm not just saying that because, oh, he can't throw the football, so he should just move to wide receiver. I just looked at him. I was like, I just don't see him as a quarterback, but I do see improvement. And that's a lot credited to, you know, what Mike Locksley did with him at his last season at Alabama. That's credit to Dan Enos, who was the quarterback coach, who kind of helped him and Tua both kind of increase their level as far as a quarterback. Too bad that he couldn't do that in Miami, but whatever. But I've seen him improve over the last 2 years. The last year at Alabama, I've seen him improve, especially when you watch that Georgia game in the SEC championship, and then on over to Oklahoma. I've seen him improve as a quarterback. So I would say, is he a better option than Joe Burrow or Tua? I don't even think he's a better option than Justin Herbert. I've watched Justin Herbert play. Justin Herbert's pretty good. I think he's better than Jake Fromm. I think he's better than Jordan Love. And, you know, I think he's better than any other prospect that's in this quarterback class, not named Herbert, Tagovailoa, or Burrow. So that's where I think Jalen Hurts is at.
And it's interesting because, look, we've talked about the improvements he's had throwing the ball, but running the ball will still be a big part of his game as well. And TD talked to Jalen Hurts about that in terms of, you know, whether or not it's tough for him to know when to pull the ball down and run with it. Here's what Jalen Hurts had to say about that.
Yeah, you know, and to each their own when it comes to that. You know, I've played the position to this point and have continued to take steps just playing that way. I think it all comes down to how decisive you are when you're back there and ultimately having answers to what it is you're doing. And, you know, I think no quarterback with the ability that I have wants to handcuff themselves in terms of, hey, I need to stay in here and throw it or do this. You know, just play your game. So I think that's the biggest thing for me. I just try and go out there and play my game. And you know, there's no telling how the play could end, but hopefully if it's an effective play, a positive play, whether it be, you know, through the air or on the ground, I think I'll take it. I think the whole entire team will take it.
Yeah, and obviously, Joe, like, you know, at the NFL position, at the quarterback position especially, you don't want your quarterback running around all the time. But that's a big part of what Jalen Hurts does, and he's really, really good at it. I mean, him running the ball, he is so good at kind of finding those lanes and avoiding big contact. I mean, that was one of the most impressive parts about watching him play at Alabama and Oklahoma. Like, athletically speaking, he is so gifted.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's a good runner. That will be utilized. And then you always get into the question of, well, first of all, we've seen an NFL team build an offense around a real dual-threat quarterback, which you haven't seen much in the NFL, but that's what the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson. Worked pretty well for him last year, playoffs notwithstanding. But it also, of course, comes down to how many hits are you willing to let a guy take, and how many hits can a particular guy take? A guy like Marcus Mariota was here. Some people would have said, hey, you should have let it rip with him and let him run around all day, but he got hurt enough with the Titans trying to, you know, to keep that limited and protect him. And that's going to be the thing with Jalen Hurts too. Can he? It's just a different deal when you get to the NFL and take some of those hits. As much as they try to protect quarterbacks, and they've certainly changed that a lot. I mean, you know, sometimes it's like just the most basic little hit after a ball is delivered and you're going to get a 15-yard penalty. But still, if you're out there running and you go from quarterback to runner, the rules change. And that's where, you know, we just don't know with Jalen Hurts. Like, how can he hold up? How much, you know, do you want to put him in harm's way? How much does that need to be a part of his game?
And now, one thing that Jalen Hurts does have working in his favor, the coaching that he's received, I mean, is pretty outstanding when you think about it. He's in high school. He played for his dad, obviously Nick Saban, Oklahoma. I mean, that's some impressive coaches that you have, especially in your college career on the list there. TD asked Jalen Hurts about that as well. Here's what Jalen Hurts had to say.
You know, I think there's one, you know, even offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches, I think there's one thing that stands consistent through all of them, my father included, Coach Riley, Coach Saban, every coach, and that's the drive they have, the dedication they have to what they do, and they all make sacrifices to do those things and to be successful, and it is what they do. So admiring those things about them and kind of seeing the process of getting, you know, the things that they've achieved, especially at the collegiate level, and Coach Saban and Coach Riley.
So no question, Joe, I think from a coaching perspective, I mean, it's been about as good as you could ask for at the college football level, especially for Jalen Hurts.
Oh, absolutely, and a variety, which may be not great for him, as Marquise mentioned. You know, continuity is good, but when you have that many different mentors, that also means that you've been exposed to different things, and that maybe that can help moving forward.
When we come back, the legendary Terry Criss, Preds TV analyst, will join us as he does each and every Friday. That's next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our very good friend Terry Criss, Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Highland Group, as he is each and every week at this time. Crispy, what's going on, my man?
Hey, guys, just like everybody else, we're staying hunkered, staying apart, which is what we all have to do, and the message is out there loud and clear. And I guess just finding things to do here and listening to you guys to see if I can pick apart on YouTube characters when you get going. Because it's always interesting who you're going to pick on one day but to the next. So, and knowing you both personally, I can appreciate you both.
And, Crispy, it's very easy to pick on us personally as well. So you're very good at that, too.
Isn't it? So, that takes a lot of years of training. That just doesn't come naturally, you know.
You're right. You're well-trained in that area. So Crispy, obviously, last night on TV, we kind of all got to relive Pecorine scoring that goal in Chicago earlier this year. Once that happened and you saw that Rene scored the goal, what was kind of your reaction to it in real time?
You know, the biggest thing I love is Pecorine's attitude. I mean, he was sitting there probably looking at the clock, thinking about this while the game was going down. The boys had a pretty well under control, the bank shot by Bonino in the net. Now he's thinking, okay, if I get a shot, if I'm going to do it, instead he could just see the wheel turning. He steps out of the net, looks, and he gets that said to me, I laughed when he said last night, when he said in his interview, I want to make sure the puck was going to settle down. Now, I'm as a coach thinking, now that's thinking. If you're on the bench and the puck is bouncing around on you and you try it and you flub it, who knows where it's going? And then he directs it. Then he just stands there and looks at it. I mean, I'd have been going around in circles and then jumping up and down from left to right. And the guys were more excited than Pekka was. But just to see it and to watch his attitude, to know that. And then he joins a club, a very select club, that did one. But the best reaction was, I'm sitting here watching with my wife, Sheila, and she goes bananas. And when she's up and cheering, and I said, hon, you've seen it before. You knew it was coming. Yeah, but it's still as exciting as me. I said, okay, go ahead. Keep going around the chair.
It's almost like we're like pretending, like you have to pretend some of the things are live now, right? I mean, you know, it's like.
Yeah, you know what? I was sitting there last night looking at it. Yeah, you know, I told you not to do that. One of the clubs in the defensive zone. Don't, you're not going to put, yeah, he did. Okay, he's on my hit list.
Well, Crispy, we're doing a bracket here at 102.5 The Game, and Paul Kariya is a part of it. And I know he was only a member of the Predators for a couple years. You're talking about a Hockey Hall of Famer at that point, one of the biggest free agents to ever sign here in Nashville, maybe the biggest free agent to ever sign here in Nashville in team history. What do you remember about watching Paul Kariya play with the Predators and specifically the impact he had on that group?
You know what? I think when I think of Paul Kariya, the first word that comes into my mind is silk, because he was not a big player, small, but he was as smooth as silk. When I used to watch him against us, when he was rampaging through the league on the line with Timu Solani and the connection they had and the plays they made, and then when we signed him and I got to know him personally and meet him, I said, he was intense, like just a polite, well-mannered young man. But intense on everything he did, sharpens his own skates. You don't touch his sticks. Traveling to the rink in the same route, et cetera, et cetera. He was one of these guys that was determined and not that big. And the other thing that sticks in my mind when I first got a chance, knowing he could do this, but watching him night in and night out, was what a passer he was. Like to pass the puck and set up plays. He probably, in my mind, is as good as any player I've seen. And I'm going to put him in the category of Wayne Gretzky, who to me was one of the best see the ice overall and make a pass through traffic that was impossible to make and put it on the other your teammate's stick, which he could do. And I always laugh when I see Scotty Hartnell, I think, Scotty, I hope about every Christmas you send a bundle of chocolates and cards to Paul Kariya for making you what he did. Because Scotty used to say, Crispy, I get myself open in front of the net. I go to that slot area. I get my stick on the ice. I direct it towards the net. I hold it firm. And I know I got a goal when I feel the puck hit my stick and go off the blade in that Paul made the pass again. It was on. He did it. So those two. And then Scott Hartnell loves it when he says about it. So Paul Kariya, probably just dynamic and silk.
So then, and of course, it's interesting in something like this because – like Robbie said, you know, a couple years, but terrific years. If we're just judging pure talent, then Paul Kariya, the most talented player to wear a Predators uniform.
Yeah, if you're talking sheer talent for just skill and knowing the game and thinking the game, I would be hard pressed to put. Yeah, one of the other guys, and people aren't going to like this sometimes, but one of the other guys who had a lot of sheer talent and could pass the puck almost as well as Paul Kariya when he played here was Radulov, Alexander. Yep. Radulov. Mm. And I know he left in whatever, but hey, you can't take away the skill set that he had, what he's doing, and what he did when he was here. So I liked his game, and he could pass the puck almost as good as Paul Kariya through traffic and make it happen. And the other guy, and right now, and I'm watching this, and if he ever decides he's going to, when he does mature in this league and make it happen, for skill and talent, is Philip Forsberg. This kid is skilled and talented. When he puts his mind to it and wants to get it done, he is one of the best out there.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us. And Crispy, you know, over the last couple of weeks, as we haven't had live sports to watch and live sports to talk about, we've kind of been going down memory lane with just some of the sports that we've grown accustomed to watching. You've been around the Predators really since day one. What was it like to watch Barry Trotz and David Poile construct this team from, you know, an expansion franchise and eventually get them to a point where they're contending for the playoffs every single season?
For me, it was like old homie because I'd gone through it as a player with the Blues and got to know Scotty Bowman when he was coaching. And then I went to the Islanders and was there when they were forming. I was the elder statesman, like I was the Tom Fitzgerald of the Islanders for the first season of three quarters of it. And then in Tampa, I got to do 7 years with Phil Esposito. And watching and Trotsky and David together, to me, was a treat because I'd gone through it, knew what they were doing, knew what was happening in the meetings, knew some of the tough decisions that they had to make coming through, not only monetarily because your budgets were limited. And I just liked the way they built their team. They were exciting. Yeah, we didn't have the most skilled hockey clubs because the other teams didn't allow that. But the teams that they put together, if you recall them, like your Hartnells and your Scotty Walkers and your Tom Fitzgeralds and go on down the line of guys that wore our jerseys in the early formative years and gave us the games that they gave us, the up and down, the hits, the checking, the sweat, the everything. I admired so much what Poile and Trotz did, forming the basis for what we have right now.
Well, Crispy, we've all got time on our hands to do some things we, you know, didn't have time for before, and that includes speculating. So, it's a weekly question for you: of how do you feel right now about the way things look? Obviously, we're hoping to get good news here in the coming weeks on, you know, what we're doing paying off, but how do you feel at this moment about, you know, the possible return of hockey, some kind of postseason and an actual, you know, a team to hoist the cup at some point?
You know what? I'm as confused right now as anybody else out there in the hockey world. All the guys I phone and talk with and discuss it, and they're all the same as I am. They're looking up saying, what are they going to do? The only feeling I get is that the NHL is working very hard, that when this is lifted and the virus and we're allowed to return to it, they do want hockey. The owners want it. You know, the players want it. Monetarily wise, number one, I don't blame them because there's a lot of money both ends put at stake out there, which, hey, that's the sporting world, number one. Number two, Mr. Bettman is right, and I love it, that he doesn't want to have a year where they didn't play for the Stanley Cup. He doesn't want that going down, but it all hinges on safety, obviously, right off the bat. But to me, it's going to be unique how they decide what team, how many teams, and what teams are in. Because you know there's going to be some happy ones and some not so happy. But one thing I can tell you, because I went to the experts and I asked this, there will be hockey. There will be hockey the rest of the season. I'm just going to tell you real quickly who the experts were. The experts were all of my grandchildren
that's right,
owned in Calgary. Because I said to them, well, what are you going to do? Well, coach, whether it's July or August, we'll all be in Nashville watching you guys in playoffs. That's where we'll be. Get the tickets ready. So I guess we're going to play somewhere because my grandchildren said we are.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, I'm in.
You got to go to the harder. Go to the experts.
That's right. That's right. Crispy, last thing for you here. You know, when people think about the best defenseman in Predators history, obviously Shea Weber is the first name that comes to mind. How close do you think Roman Josi is at surpassing Shea Weber for that? Do you think he's already done it? Do you think he still has ways to go? Like, how close do you think it is between Shea Weber and Roman Josi?
I love that question because you're talking of two of my favorite people. When Shea Weber was here, and now Roman Josi. And they're very, very equal, different in styles, but equal in the stature to me, to what they mean to the hockey club. And Shea Weber was here in the formative years, I keep mentioning, when we needed the big, strong, silent type that when he walked into the dressing room, he was a presence. When he walked out on the ice, he was a presence and made things happen. And when they had to close the door and have a closed-door meeting, he was the one you knew who was going to slam that door and lock it and go toe-to-toe with the players, Shea Weber. And then when he brought on the ice, the cannon, I mean, we made the hockey world when he was out there. I mean, just ask our own players. We had more guys hurt by friendly fire due to Shea Weber firing it than anybody, but the guys went. And now you have Roman. So every time that Roman walks by, he always has a look about him that, yeah, he's going to do something. And when he picks up the puck, I mean, how long has it been? We had two players here, or we have two players right here, right now, that I think in their game and when they're playing it, that when they grab the puck and start heading down ice, the fans all get up. Halfway up, then full up, expecting something to happen. And that's Roman Josi, number one, when he sets off on a mission, heading down ice with the puck. Fans and everybody says, what's going to happen? Something will happen. And like I said, when Philip Forsberg is playing his game and gets on his track, he's another one. But between Josi and Weber, you know what? Right now, this is my mind and my heart, neck and neck.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Crispy, thanks so much as always for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys for phoning me, guys. I really appreciate you guys picking up the phone, calling me this morning, and my wife really appreciates it, guys, when you do it.
Got a short break from you, huh?
I didn't say that.
Thanks, Crispy. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Hey, to all you guys out there, stay healthy, and to all of our people out there, everybody everywhere, stay with it and do your part. Stay apart. Thanks, all.
Absolutely. Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst, brought to you every week by Highland Group. When we come back, Adam Vingan of The Athletic has come out with a Predators fan survey that's got some interesting responses. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, Marquise Munson behind the glass. Munson bringing this back in with little Prince there. I like it. That's some good stuff there, Munson.
Little Raspberry Beret, Around the World in a Day album.
Hey, yeah, buddy. One of my favorite Prince
underrated.
Songs. Yeah, one of my favorite Prince songs.
Good one. Pop Life, my favorite Prince song, is on the same album, by the way.
It's a great album.
Wow. It is a really good album. I used to listen to that in the car. My mom would listen to Prince riding around that specific album. I'm a big-time Prince fan. I'm not ashamed to admit it. He was awesome.
Oh, he was great. One of the best.
So, Joe, your colleague, Adam Vingan at The Athletic, who, of course, joins us here on Morning Drive pretty much every week, has come out with a fan poll, a Predators fan poll, and some really interesting responses here by the fans on a variety of different issues. And there's one in particular I want to get to in just a second regarding player movement. But obviously a big topic of conversation among Predators fans this year has been coaching. And the obvious question of, should the Predators have fired Peter Laviolette? That came up in Adam Vingan's article. And usually, like, Joe, when things like this happen, and especially like you read the echo chamber, that is Twitter, there are very divisive opinions and kind of extreme opinions on either side that leave you to believe that maybe it's 50-50 in terms of the fan base. More than 80% of people who responded to this poll believe the Predators made the right decision to fire Peter Laviolette. I was kind of surprised the number was that high.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess it's a little high, but I think also if you asked that exact question in this exact same forum before they fired him, I think it would be different.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think fans want to, you know, they want to believe that what happened was right. So a lot more probably like, yeah, they fired him, and yeah. I mean, I think when it was the question of should he be fired, I think it was closer to, if not 50-50, maybe 60-40, whatever it was, you know? So I think there's that. I think the next question interested me was, John Hines the right choice to replace Laviolette? Yes, 37.4. No, 62.6. I was a little surprised by that. I would have guessed that to be closer to 50-50.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the picture is so incomplete with John Hines right now, and, you know, he's played 28 games, I think they've played since he's taken over as head coach, and, you know, there's also like a confidence level that the fans have voted on here for John Hines, and basically it's like right in the middle in terms of their confidence. I think more than 55% of people in this poll voted that, you know, just kind of still in wait-and-see mode. I think 3 out of 5 was the most popular. And look, I think honestly, like, really anything more than that, if you're a Predators fan, like if you're extremely confident right now in John Hines, I think it's probably premature for that. If you're ready to just pull the plug and are totally in panic mode about John Hines, I think it's way too early for that as well. So I think the kind of the wait-and-see approach that the Predators fans have taken in this poll is probably the right one.
Yeah, so basically like 6% of respondents on the confidence level for John Hines, I agree, are like, just, you know, slow it down. 4.2 are like, you know, zero, and then 1.8 are like absolute greatest confidence in the world. Like, yeah, you shouldn't have either of those. And that's why it's centered right in the middle is exactly where it should be, 55.5%, right? It's a wait and see. The next one, well, it's not the next one, but the David Poyle confidence question I thought was interesting. And I would say, I mean, the highest percentage, first of all, I think what 90% basically are three or higher.
Yes.
Which I think is quite an endorsement of David Poyle. And the highest is four, which is, you know, four out of five confidence level. So next to highest confidence level, 38.4%. I thought that was interesting. I mean, that's one of those where you talk about the echo chamber, Robbie. And I think even in media, I know, you know, certainly if some fair criticisms that we in media have delivered of some of the deals that haven't worked out. And then that's a question is, okay, so recently some things haven't worked out, but what's your confidence level in general of him? And it's still very high. And I think that's a rational viewpoint when you look at his whole career and all that he's done to build it here. But I will say that I wouldn't have necessarily guessed it to be that high.
No, I was kind of surprised it was that high. Now, look, I would have thought that the overwhelming results would have been that it would have been, you know, confident in David Poyle, which they are. You know, only like 10% of people showing no confidence in David Poyle at this point, or very little confidence. That part is a little surprising to me, especially given what happens on my Twitter account every time the Predators lose a game and the criticism that comes the way of David Poyle and the coaching staff. But again, Twitter is an echo chamber and isn't real life. I think fans just look at the roster that he's put together, and nobody can really deny the talent is there. And at the end of the day, the general manager's job is to bring in talent and give you a competitive roster. And I think it would be hard to argue against the fact that David Poyle has done that.
Absolutely. Also, Robbie, this means that readers at theathletic.com/Nashville are very smart. That's
yes.
Another thing to definitely take away from here. The next one I think is really interesting. Not surprising, but it's overwhelming. And that is, if Poyle were to trade a core member, who would you want it to be? 59.2, Ryan Johansson. Surprised by that?
And that's what I wanted to get to, because you look at the options here on the list, and the ones that received and the most vote, obviously Ryan Johansson. But Johansson, Arvidsson, Ekholm, Ellis, Turris, and Matt Duchene are really the options given by fans here on the vote. And more than 59% have said Ryan Johansson. The next closest vote getter was actually Victor Arvidsson at 16%. So there is a huge gap between Johansson and Arvidsson in terms of what the fans have said. If David Poyle is forced to make a trade for a core member of the roster, Ryan Johansson right now is who Preds fans overwhelmingly would choose to be the one traded.
Yeah, I'm not surprised Johansson is first. That is an eye-popping number. That's 59%. I will say that I'm a little surprised Arvidsson's at 16, but you know what I'm even, I think, more surprised about? Arvidsson 16, Ekholm 7.6. I would have guessed the next two names after Johansson to be Ellis and Turris. Ellis just signed the big deal. He's played really well this year, but still, he signed a big deal. And Turris, I mean, I guess I would have expected Turris to be more like 20%. I mean, you know, like, again, the thing with Turris is you can't trade him because of his contract. But if the question is, if he were to trade one, who would you want it to be? Wouldn't Turris be really high on the list? I that's what I would assume. Is it because people just are resigned to the fact that you can't trade him? I don't know, but I can't believe that he is the fifth highest vote getter on this, and only 4%.
Maybe people just really like what they've seen out of Kyle Turris since John Hines took over. I don't know. That's an interesting point there, Joe.
I mean, it's been better, but it's not like it's been, like, you know,
he hasn't
amazing.
Lit the world on fire or anything like that. No, it is interesting. And like Ekholm might have like the most team friendly contract right now in the entire league.
Yeah, you don't want to trade him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. I would assume, and look, to be honest with you, if we're having this conversation after that Dallas series last year, something tells me that Ryan Ellis would have been a lot higher on that list.
Oh, no question. And he's played great this year, so that's a big part of it. But, and Arvidsson, I mean, I think that's one – obviously he's had a tougher year. He's been hurt, but he's had a tougher year. And I think with him, it is growing in terms of the idea of he gets battered in playoff series, and he has not had great playoff production. I think that's got to be a big part of that.
Also mentioned in the poll, who is your favorite player in Predators history? Joe, I don't think a surprise at all here. The overwhelming winner is Pekka Rinne with 135 votes. Shea Weber, the next closest, coming in at second with just 37 votes. So Pekka Rinne has almost 100 more votes than the second-place finisher in Shea Weber.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. I think I would have expected Weber to be second. Josi Strong in there. I guess I would have, again, on the Arvidsson front, I think I might have expected Arvidsson to do a little better here. I mean, no matter what you think about what we just talked about, you know, the playoff situation, whatever, he's such a popular player to me. I mean, everybody loves the little guy who can go out there and take a beating and still produce and be so relentless. But I really thought it was interesting that Jordan Tutu makes the list at, you know, with 12 votes. I mean, that's
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, is that right? Yeah, I mean, I guess I just wouldn't have automatically thought. I know that, you know, obviously he's a guy people have strong feelings for, and of course his story is really important. But I don't know. I guess I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, it's interesting because Adam, like, talks about other players that received a vote that weren't on the list. So, you know, you've got names like, you know, Paul Kariya and Tomas Fokun and P.K. Subban.
C-Mace.
Cali Yarncroke on the list. Somebody voted for Cali Yarncroke as their all-time favorite Predators player.
I'm so glad you brought up Cali Yarncroke because, okay, so my wife's niece, Callie, lives in Brentwood. Okay, Callie Matwijic. Okay. She has been begging me to like introduce her to Cali Yarncroke, okay? Because, well, I think a lot of little girls, yeah, I mean, look, I think a lot of women and girls think he's like, I mean, he's a good-looking man, right? Cali Yarncroke is a good-looking man. So I'm like, look, I don't know, you know what I say? I don't know how it came about, but someone got him to send her a video on her birthday, and he said, "Happy birthday, Cali from Calais." We saw the video last night. I'm like, that is so awesome. So props to Cali Yarncroke. So that may
Absolutely.
Be, and that may answer the question a little bit. He is a good-looking man.
Maybe that's why he got the vote.
I think it might be.
Absolutely. When we come back, Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason will join us. Excited to have him join the program. That coming up next. First, are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill, or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game, or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. We'll be right back with Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.